to InFlight Entertainment's Filmmakers Lounge. And we have a very, 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 very special guest at the lounge here tonight. I met this guy at Austin Revolution Film Festival. Shout out to James and everyone at ARF. Miss you guys. Kindred Spirit. He's going to talk a little bit more about the project that he had down in Austin. That when I went down there, I had my short film at her, and we just clicked, and we stayed in contact. And he's one of those fellows that you just such a bright spirit that I love hearing from him.
Nicest thing anyone's ever described me, sir.
Yeah, well, you know, man, that's how you are, man. You just bring a smile on people's faces, you know. But your fearlessness in storytelling, as well as just your personality, is just infectious. And I'm so happy to bring you to the lounge, ladies and gentlemen. I give you Jason Buterin.
Yeah, I mean, that's close enough. I mean, Buterin, but I mean,
Buterin. Okay,
every pronunciation under the sun. So as long as some letters are in there, I'm good, brother.
Well, yeah. As long as I got the syllable,
the syllabic count was good. We're good.
Sweet. All right, cool. All right, how's it going, brother? How you feeling?
Living the dream, sir.
All right.
Speaking nightmare. It's hard to tell sometimes. It can be a slippery slope.
Yeah, I hear you, brother. I hear you. So tell everyone at the lounge a little bit about yourself. What's the superhero origin story with you?
My superhero origin story. That's a frightening thought. Well, I was born a poor black child. No way, that's the answer. I didn't say this color though, but I born in the island of misfit toys. I mean, the backwoods of the back roads of the middle of the left of nowhere, Missouri. Chip on my shoulder the size of Pangea. I read way too many books when I was way too young. I grew up in a trailer park, and then my dad was like, "Here, read the encyclopedia." Well, we only had we couldn't afford the Encyclopedia Britannica, so we had 12 volumes for 26 letters. And too smart for my own good, too smart ass for my teacher's own good. Started reading early at a voracious age, and then just started writing and stuff like that. And then ended up going to undergrad, getting a whole bunch of degrees. So I have a whole bunch of fancy letters behind my name that really amount to what's the rating on this show?
You can it's a free fall.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I have all these degrees. I'm out of the jack and shit for what I do for my professional living. But I was at the place, the City of Roses, Cape Girardeau, Missouri, also hometown of Rush Limbaugh. So there's a selling point for you. When I met a golden goddess who was getting her MFA in dance, and she was going to Greensboro, and I didn't want to deal with a long-term relationship. So I was like, fuck it. So I shook the dice. And then the dice in those days were dial-up. And then ended up moving to Greensboro, North Carolina. And that was 23 years ago. And I'm still with the same golden goddess. She hasn't told me to fuck off or change the locks yet. So I'm going to have something going for me. But it was she's part of the reason I got into this whole crazy Molly movie-making world of filmmaking. Because I had been watching movies my entire life. My two best friends growing up were the county library and the video store in town. Both were 25 miles equidistant. You had to drive obscenely mile long to get to anything.
Was it a mom and pop, or was it a Blockbuster?
No. I mean, this was in the early 80s. I mean, it was Video Classics in Warrenton, Missouri. I can even remember my membership number was 148, but they're defunct now, so you can't rent pornographic videos on my account any longer. I know that would be right if you could, but I can remember my membership number to that video store. I remember all from high school math. Like, I'm like, nothing stuck. But I grew up watching movies my entire life and was a writer for most of it, and just found myself getting mad at the stories. I'm like, it would have been better if it had been this, or if they had done this, or they should have done this, or done this. And after about the second or third day, my wife just got it. She's like, fine, then you fucking do it. And I was like, fine, I will then. And then, you know, I mean, as many people know, trying to counteract the logic of feminine wiles, I had to just fucking shut up and do it. And I did, and I haven't gone back since. And I'm fully I fully believe that this is what I was meant to be. It just took me 40 some odd years to realize what I wanted to be when I grow up. But it's once you make a movie, like, you can't do anything the same way again ever. From the most minute, you know, quotidian thing, like taking out the trash at night. You walk out and there's a dude there. You're thinking about how you'd light it. You're thinking about, like, you would break it down, like taking out the trash in four shots. So I've written columns about, like, the filmmaker's guide to the real world. And, like, how, I mean, you can't watch anything. Like, sometimes even just watching things, like, the enjoyment is gone because you're analyzing all of it. That was a cut. I mean, and not that that's a bad thing, but it's just, I had no idea. Like, I mean, just sort of the veil that would drop once you made a movie. And it's like, oh shit. Oh snap. Yeah. Brother Yusuf, I dare to say that it made my soul glow. And wow. That glow has not popped.
Yes.
I hope I won.
Yes. And I can say without any reservation that boy is indeed good.
I can't sing. Although there was a funny time, I have a habit of being mistaken for various doppelgangers. Usually if the hair is long, it's like, oh, you're the Rob Zombie guy, you're the guy from the Black Crows. I was at a convention, a film festival in Paducah, Louisville, Kentucky. And we went to a bar and there was dueling pianos. It was a really cool setup and stuff like that. And some girl comes up and she's like, you look like the guy from the Black Crows. I'm like, I've never heard that before in 5 minutes. She stumbles off. My friend's like, what was that about? And I'm like, hey, people think I like the dude from the Black Crows. It happens all the time, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, okay. So he goes and tells the sound guy that the guy from the Black Crows is hanging out in the audience, but not to tell anybody. And then nice. You just watch, like, the sound guy tell someone, and they tell someone, and they tell someone. 5 minutes later, you can just watch it spread across the entire fucking piano bar. Security guy comes up, he's like, man, you're not him. That's bullshit. And brings up to, like, Chris Robinson's picture on his phone and holds it next to my face. He goes, holy shit, it is you, Mr. Robinson. I'm like, yes, it is.
So, yes, where are my free drinks, damn it?
Yeah, so, but he tells the band, and they're like, well, we got a celebrity in the audience. So, like, I'm like, because I can't. I mean, everyone can sing. Most people can't sing well. I was like, I'm in town with a documentary film crew, and it's in my rider that I can't sing because, you know, me and all. But I can play the drums. They didn't say anything about that. And they're like, oh, do you want to play the drums for a song? I'm like, sure. I don't think Chris Robinson plays a fucking drum. Point is, I spent like 3 fucking hours signing autographs and taking pictures with people. Like, I had my friend Jesse, I'm like, bring up Chris Robinson, like, just eBay Chris Robinson's signature. He brought up a picture. I'm like, oh. So I started signing it, like, at least to kind of match it in case they try and sell it and whatever the verification process is. Wow. The chief of police of Louisville was like, if you need anything, Mr. Robinson, you let me know. I'm like, I need 5 minutes in the evidence room and a trash bag. What? But that also gave me a really good idea for a game, like a reality TV show, game show we should make. We should make this one now. And I'm sure you're sure by talking about it, we have a poor man's copyright where yes. You give like somebody, like you give them like 60 seconds on the clock in the evidence room and a trash bag. And whenever they get the trash bag, they're free to walk out with. And then as soon as their feet land on the sidewalk, you arrest them for all the contraband they have. So, like, the show just perpetually feeds itself. Like, you get to exploit the deplorability of humanity and then eat tacos afterwards or something. I don't know.
Yeah, just have a taco truck, like, right in the lot. You
know? Yeah, like sponsorship and stuff. But so, it's like, you can get tacos or you can walk around with contraband. And I mean, ideally, it's like the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Like, you should make the right choice. You know, choose wisely. Choose poorly.
Right. Tacos. Right, exactly. Don't break the seal also. No. All right. So what gives you
the right, like,
sir? Okay. Now, what gives you the creative fuel? You know, like what germ of idea that pops in your head? Because I know as a filmmaker, all of us have like a million and one things just kind of bouncing around in our head as far as concepts, ideas, treatments, things of that. What's that one that you pluck? It's like, okay, this is what I'm going to spend my blood, sweat, tears on to get out to the world. Like, what? How do you shuffle all of the maybes to that one? Yeah.
How do I dilute all the voices down to one?
Yes. One
man. I tend to ruminate and marinate on things for a very long time. Like, I mean, I'll start a screenplay. I mean, it's usually a couple of years before I ever get to filming or something like that. So, I mean, there's 5 or 6 things I'm technically writing right now at this moment. But I mean, just in various stages. So it just, I'll put it on the back burner and then get distracted by my son or doing something, you know, doing this or doing that or something like that. So things tend to just brew and slowly percolate for a long time. And then I just find myself, I mean, just, you know, and then it's one of those things like sort of out of sight, out of mind. And then you're doing something else, or you're playing a fucking video game, or you're doing something, and it just seems mindless and minutia of everyday life. And just something clicks, or somebody says something, or you hear a song, or, you know, there's, yeah, just, I mean, it could literally be anything these days. I mean, I've got the attention span of like a drunken chinchilla. I'm like, what? You know, a lot of times, I mean, you know, I'm very, very lucky because, I mean, I have two beautiful blondes in my life. One saved my life, the other saved my soul. And they're very, very inspiring for me. So, I mean, there was one short film I wrote, Don't Let the Light On, that I wrote sort of based on my son. I named the little boy Jack, and he's convinced that it's him in the movie. I'm like, it's not you in the movie. But his name is Jack. That's going to happen a lot. Really. Like, I don't need to. So I didn't have the heart to tell. Like, no, that's totally you. You've won awards. Yeah. It makes me very, very happy. So, I mean, it's just everything. But I think like a lot of writers, I mean, there's a certain amount of autobiographical authenticity to everything I write. Most recently with the most recent project I've done, which is now in post-production, The Blue-Eyed Boy and Mr. Deaf. Everything, you know, I was, you know, anything from like names or stupid shit I've said in the past or dumb things I've done with my friends, before the era of social media. So there's only Polaroid documentation of it. Nothing did. So, I mean, there was always a fair degree of real life in that, but I mean, the Blue-Eyed Boy and Mr. Death, I mean, is plucked straight out of my id. Kill Giggles is largely a lot of the same because I am deathly afraid of clowns. I loathe them with the fiery passion of a thousand suns. And you try and explain it to people, like, what? You mean like it? I mean, no, motherfucker, like Ronald McDonald, and going to that scary ass, creepy ass playground at McDonald's in the 80s. And like crawl inside the Grimace and he's eating you. You're like, I don't wanna. I understand the need for like veganism. You're like, oh, I get it. That's fucked up. I mean, I like chicken nuggets and McDonald's fish fillets way too much to ever embrace that lifestyle. But if it wasn't for the people. So, I mean, inspiration. I mean, I never know where it's gonna strike. And to me, that's sort of the beauty of it. I mean, I think once you figure out a formula, once you can sort of predict that, some of that spark is lost, maybe.
Yeah.
There's things I'm writing right now. One is I want to kill cancer. Like I want to physically corporealize cancer and then just kill the fucking shit out of it in like the best sci-fi action horror thriller revenge movie ever. Largely because no one's done it. I'm like, you know, just a completely desiccated era of remakes and reboots and refranchises and re-envisionings. Like, we don't have any original ideas. Let's do what we did 5 years ago. And they'll fucking reboot it. And it gets like a multi-million-dollar budget. To find those little things that just haven't been done yet. That's kind of fun too.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
and I also do a lot of acting too, so I'm hoping to get cast in a use of conjoint someday. But I mean, that's, you know,
thoughts. Dude, you're gonna be my Bruce Campbell, like, you know.
I want to be pizza stoner delivery guy number two. But not number one, because that's way too much pressure. Like, I just want to walk by and be like, whoa. And then I don't even stop. Camera doesn't stop panning. Like, and that's about the status that I want. So if you ever have pizza stoner delivery guy number two.
Wow, man. Now we have higher aspirations for pizza stoner guy number two, man. We all get you in. It's going to be Godfather status for you, man. Like, nothing less. Yeah. Okay, so... Oh, all right. When we met, we were in Austin, we were in ARV. I think I had Father Jayla down there, and you had the Kill Giggles, but it wasn't the feature. It was like the
trouble. It was a proof of concept. Yeah.
It was a proof of concept. Yes. Okay. So tell me a little bit about like the journey like that started. Well, I dropped in on you when it was like, oh, it's in film festivals now. Like, so how long did it take for you to kind of get that together? And when was your decision to do proof of concept and then parlay it to the springboard to do the feature?
Kill Geeks was something, I mean, I'd had sort of nagging at the back of my brain for a long time. And originally I just... I was tired of seeing all the movies where the clowns dressed up like serial killers. You know, they would dress up like, you know, the serial killers would dress up like clowns, or the monsters would be clowns, you know, or whatever like that. It was always that same sort of rehashed story. And I was kind of wondering, and I have a, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, a somewhat askew view of the universe. So I was kind of like, why hasn't anybody ever made a serial killer of clowns? Like, it just kind of seemed like a no brainer to me. I'm like, there's tons of fuckers out there that hate clowns. So why not just, you know, you could just sort of, it's a very easily script flip. And I was like, well, someone surely had to have done that before. And I spent hours and weeks researching it. And me and Shirley couldn't come up with jack shit that anybody had ever done. I'm like, why? How is this possible? So it's one of those things that's like, well, I'm going to do it. So like, and then like, I started filling composition books, and I've got them in a box over there. I think my wife's got them set aside for like, whenever my commitment hearing is. I'm not sure when. They haven't told me, but it's pretty much going to be like exhibits, like I think A through Z. Of clown death. It was like, and that's one of the things I love about filmmaking so much, is it's a wonderful catharsis to do all the evil shit that you want to do to people, because we're fucking dumb, and we're just dumb animals and creatures. And the fact that we haven't delivered ourselves into the hands of our own extinction amazes me. We're getting close. But that's the beauty of filmmaking, is that, I mean, you can just, if you're scared of something, kill the fuck out of it. And then, you know, you don't get any blood on your clothes, or you might, but it should wash out depending on your FX person. And then, like, you don't have to go to jail, and you bypass the whole penal system. And then that's just funny to say, because penal. I would respect the kill giggles. And then no one had done it. So I just started filling composition books, and I was like, well, it'll be a short film. And I had like three composition books full of clown death. Like both sides, I'm like, we can do this and this and this and this. And then I meet with a couple people, like, you need to make this a feature. I was like, okay, that sounds like a good idea. So I started to start writing a screenplay. And the first draft of the screenplay was about 300 pages, and I wasn't done yet. But I kept telling my DP, he's like, well, how's the screenplay going? I'm like, it's 300 pages. And every time I would tell him, I'm like, he would pee a little. I'm like, well, it's going to be fine, dude. It's going to be like an 18-hour Ken Burns narrated documentary on the history of clown killing. And turns out we didn't have the budget for that. We didn't know what a budget was. So I started scaling down the script and stuff like that. And I mean, this was probably over a period of about 4 years. But just scaling it down, scaling it down, scaling it down. I think I got it down to a very svelte 110 pages, which is about as much as I was willing to compromise. So, you know, we had the script, but I, you know, after being fortunate to have attended ARF for several years and a lot of other film festivals, you know, Genre Blast, Nightmares Film Festival, Crimson Screen, down in South Carolina, I had the good graces and the honor to be able to see a lot of, I mean, just absolutely not cutting edge, but just original inspired horror and thriller movies. And then that to me was remarkable. Again, an era of remakes and reboots and everything else like that, just to see the vivacity and intensity of filmmaking ideas that were out there. And it was like, I think Kill Giggles could be a part of this. And seeing what worked in terms of how people were submitting and packaging and sort of what they were doing with their product. So I, you know, I thought, if, you know, because before, I mean, you know, we had minor success with the short films and crowdsourcing and everything like that. But I knew with Kill Giggles, you know, to be able to pull off a feature, that you sort of had to multiply everything to an exponential degree in terms of money raised and everything else like that. So I figured I wanted to be able to have as much as possible under my belt to be able to show people how serious I was about making the movie. So to me, you know, that meant having, you know, we shot like four featurettes and did a photo shoot in one weekend, a couple of photo shoots. But I mean, I had probably about a year and a half worth of permission, you know, promotional publicity material to be able to disseminate out and stuff like that. I wanted to have a proof of concept, because to me, if you're going to ask people for money, you need to be able to give them an idea of what you were trying to pull off. And then I also had the screenplay, so that we sort of had a multi-pronged approach, and submitting the screenplay to festivals and having the proof of concept, which is essentially like the first scene of the film, to be able to have that. So they've got the visual sense of it. And, you know, I mean, just they can read the screenplay, read the script and see where we're going with it, and just try to market that as a good idea. And then I noticed other filmmaking friends kind of doing that same thing. I'm like, I had a good idea. But so we did that, and we did a couple of different crowdfunding things and stuff like that, and ended up we shot the feature film. We shot Kill Giggles in 19 days in a North Carolina summer, which I don't recommend or advise. It's not good. We weren't smart.
So did you have like a dedicated makeup person to patch up all the mosquito bites for the close-ups.
It's like in North Carolina summer, you step out, it's like, you know, I mean, the humidity usually rivals the temperature. So, I mean, you step outside, you're instantly moist. So it's just like having clowns and makeup. So I tried to limit the number of outdoor scenes. But I was lucky enough to be able to, you know, we had brilliant FX people, brilliant producers, brilliant cast, brilliant crew and stuff like that. So the people we were able to sort of, I was able to pull together. We made movie magic in 19 days. And regardless of what level of professionalism you're at in filmmaking, to me, that's a tremendous feat. Yeah. We've gone through, we're still sort of in distribution purgatory, limbo. There's sort of a lot of what ifs and stuff like that. But so I maybe that might serve as like, we're probably going to be like a, all the filmmaking books about like, because everyone talks about like how to get distribution, how to get your film distributed, how to get it distributed. And everybody talks like that's the end all be all of filmmaking. But nobody ever tells you what happens after you get distribution, like deliverables. There's not a book about deliverables, you know, legal deliverables and digital deliverables and everything else like that. And Killgiggles, we were lucky to get a distribution offer dangled in front of us and that and succulent, tasty carrot pawed away. And we're like, yeah, and we dove into it and then just sort of dealing with the aftermath of all that and just trying to get the movie out. Because I've said too much before and I'll get in trouble. Like people get mad at me. It's like, there's a lot I want to say, but I probably shouldn't. But
hey, man, this is a lounge, man.
Stays in the lounge and then just the rest of the internet. Exactly. But Killgiggles, it was, I wanted to see if I could pull off a feature film. And the people that I was able to pull together and stuff like that helped me do that. And to me, you know, I mean, like I said, we made movie magic and I will forever be proud of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it was.
I got to kill a lot of clowns. Like I got to draw and quarter a rodeo clown. Like I mean, it was just for a bloke who's terrified and hates like you know, for a guy who hates looking at clowns, having to be on set with clowns for like 19 fucking days and then look at them and do all these character concepts is like I am clearly not the brightest bulb in the box. But to me, like it was ill-advised self-administered psychotherapy. So like, I still hate them. I don't like the floppy footed fuckers. I can look at them. I just choose not to, you know, it's kind of like racist or something like that. You're like, I mean, I can see you. I don't want to look at you, but you're there. So I acknowledge you're there, but just fuck off.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, have what you need to exercise those demons, or in this case, clowns.
They're the same thing, brother.
Exactly. One of the same. Okay, so you mentioned going through the process of getting the funds for the feature and things of that nature. Now, was it a situation? And I ask everyone this just to get an insight because everyone scanned this cat differently. So do you get your budget more or less in order far as price wise to get the feature up and then you do the funding, or you just do the funding and see how much you gather and like, okay, so we got this much, let's see what we can do for this much?
Yeah, I mean, I had a basic idea, and I was talking to a lot of people and kind of trying to get like what's the best friends and family discount we can do. With Killgiggles, we did equity. We had two different sort of crowdfunding campaigns. We did, the second one was Indiegogo, which I've had a lot of success with in the past. Excuse me. We also did equity crowdfunding. So instead of being something perk based, we ended up selling shares in the movie. But we used a company called Start Engine. And it was just, I mean, it was $100 a share and you could have like sort of like perk levels and stuff, but it wasn't really about anything tangible. It was about buying shares in the film. And then once that comes out, like getting those investors paid back and stuff like that. And we were able to raise a surprising chunk of change that route. But that's also predicated upon the film actually being released, which Hollywood seems to have its head up someone's ass. I'm not entirely sure who, but someone. I hope it's roomy up there. I hope the view is nice. So, you know, it's just, yeah. But with Killgills, you know, I had an idea. We had an idea in mind of just of basic numbers and stuff like that. We knew what we wanted to do. We've always been with Mad Ones Films very, very lucky to be able to make movies on an aglet of a shoestring of a budget. So, you know, to be able to stretch a dollar and stuff like that, and to not get stuff donated to us, but to be able to make it, to work as much as possible with as little as we've got. And then Kill Giggles allowed us to be able to sort of expand that to a larger degree, to be able to, you know, because I wanted to, you know, we had a Joe Harp and then Matt Patterson and Soraya. We had an amazing effects and a makeup team and stuff like that. So I didn't want them to be bound, you know, I mean, just by budget, by numbers and stuff like that. So, I mean, going into it, we had a lot of the destinies, like, you know, I mean, getting estimates and stuff, and like, what will it cost to pull this off? What will it take to pull this off? You know, and sort of having like a best, medium, and lowest common denominator, kind of three different sort of scenarios on what we want to be able to pull off. And there was a couple of scenes where, I mean, we spent three, four years plotting out the drawing and quartering scene. Like, I mean, like from angles and like, you know, I would have like, we had multiple taco meetings where I had like myself and then the DP and then the effects guy. And it's like, I want to be able to do this and this and this and this. Well, the DP is like, well, we can shoot it like this. The effects guy is like, if we shoot it like that, then we can do that. So, I mean, to be able to have everyone involved in the pre-production process. And I obsess about pre-production sometimes to an annoying and meticulous degree. But to me, the more that you can put into pre-production, that, you know, that involves budgeting and fundraising and everything else like that, the more that you can put into that, the more time it will save you on set and in post and everything else like that, you know. And it saves so many headaches and so many hassles and stuff like that. So to me, it always helps. And again, being able to see what works on the film festival circuit, being able to see what works just with having friends and supporting their campaigns and stuff like that, and having my own campaigns. For the most part, I think I've been pretty lucky in terms of being able to do decently with the crowdfunding. So I mean, the budget is important. I haven't, you know, worked like on in like the West Coast and like, you know, in terms of like SAG and union kind of stuff like that. I haven't gotten into that territory at all. But to me, you know, the indie realm, and there are many, many different spheres of overlapping Venn diagram existence in the indie film world. But to me, it all boils down to that basic idea, and that it all stems from passion. So if you've got the passion for, you know, to be able to put the amount of time into it, that if you're going to ask strangers for their hard-earned money, you have to be able to back it up. You have to be able to get their attention for 5 fucking seconds on the internet, which is hard to do without tits or tacos. Sometimes it's tits and tacos. But I mean, you've got to be able to make yourself stand out. And, you know, 10 years ago, there was Indiegogo and there was Kickstarter, and that was it. And it was for like music and movies. And now there's like GoFundMe, and I don't want to pay my bills.com, so you do it for me. And it's just like, yeah, oh, seriously, it's just like, I don't want to pay my bills. Okay. And you can start a fucking GoFundMe, and they're like, and fucking people will give you money. I'm like, why am I working at a job again? But it's one of those vexing vagaries of modern existence. But yeah, I mean, it's important. And I think the having a budget in mind, or at least having a sense of what you need to be able to pull off, and then sort of, you know, dropping it down from there, I was like, well, what's the bare minimum you need to be able to pull it off for you to be happy? And then, you know, in the dream world, dream budget, like, what's your dream budget? So, I mean, just to be able to sort of to have that flexibility in terms of the finances is important, because that can dictate the entire course of pre-production, production, but it can dictate the entire film sometimes.
Right.
So very important. But also, math is a hell of a drug. I don't like math.
Yeah, good point. Okay, so would you suggest you mentioned the equity fundraising aspect. Like, would you suggest that for people that's trying to raise money for their film? Like,
it's a whole different beast than doing like Indiegogo or Kickstarter, because, like, I mean, you're basically getting in bed with the SEC. You've got to have, you know, and I mean, I think most indie filmmakers will have an LLC anyway for a project. I mean, that's just sort of a given for a lot of folks. But you've got to, let's say you've got to get in bed with the SEC. You've got to have like a business identification number. Like, there are a lot more legal hoops to jump through in terms of reporting and accounting and all this other kind of stuff like that. If you've got the business savvy, or you can make friends with somebody who has that sort of entrepreneurial acumen than your aces. I myself do not have it. That's abundantly clear. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck these people are saying. But I made really, really good friends with people who do. So one of my dear friends who's a producer on the project sort of walked me through that and held my hand. He's like, this is what the adults mean. I'm like, oh, I'm like, well, then you fill that shit out. So, I mean, it's a lot more to take on than just sort of like setting up an Indiegogo or a Kickstarter campaign or something like that. But depending on what you're doing and what you want to do with the project, you know, I mean, and again, sort of with the right marketing, with the right preparation, you can raise a big chunk of change. You know, I mean, if you're selling shares for $100 a pop and you're doing a feature, I mean, I've seen people, you know, for features, you know, clear 200,000, 250,000, like, you know, 500,000 on those things. But wow. I mean, it's an amazing amount of time that goes into it. And then just the accounting and the follow-up and everything else like that. I mean, this isn't like sending out, you know, like 20 t-shirts and a bunch of fucking posters like this. I mean, everything's on track with the SEC. Like people are keeping track of this. So it's one of those things, like if you want to be able to go after sort of the higher end investors and, you know, I mean, $100 a share, I mean, that's $100 can be, you know, two or three bills for somebody. I mean, that can make the difference between like rent or groceries or, you know, putting food on your table or what you're keeping the lights on. So it doesn't have the scale of affordability that, you know, that the Indiegogo and the Kickstarters do with your $5 and your $10, your lower price perks, right, then let's become a part of the movie making process. So, I mean, it's, you're sort of going after that higher end, higher dollar investor type. But again, if you do the prep and, you know, see, there's a whole lot with your campaign and similar in terms of getting all the materials and all the numbers and everything else ready. And we saw what a lot of people were doing. And, you know, we tried to be able to take that and sort of emulate that and to just sort of to stand on our own with, this is what we want to do. And we had a surprising amount of luck with it. And then we followed that up with an Indiegogo campaign. So between the two and then all the various life debts and favors and probably blood oaths and everything else like that I had to go to be able to make this thing happen, we were able to make it happen. So it's a different route to go. I've seen some filmmakers trying to sort of explore that route lately. But again, it's getting in bed with a different beast.
Yeah. Now, are you doing the same process with the new feature that you're working on?
The one I just did now is a short. So I've got Blue Eyed Boy and Mr. Death as a short. And then the feature that I want to do, that's going to be the one where we kill cancer, which will be fun. And I've got a bunch of ideas for that one. Well, it's one of those, like, if I can write the right script and pull it off right, it's one of those films that, I mean, I think I can get a tremendous amount of people involved on both sides of the camera, and some will do it for selfish reasons. Like, I mean, it's going to be, if I can market it right, like it's going to be the best revenge film ever. Yeah. But, you know, there are going to be those people that will, you know, that will do it for selfish reasons. They'll be like, look how important I am. I'm doing this movie where we're going to kill cancer. And there are people who do it for sincere reasons because they fucking hate cancer because it killed like their mom or their dad or their grandma or their best friend or their wife or their lover or somebody like that.
Exactly.
I don't think I'm going to run into that person who's like, no, I love cancer. I don't want to be involved in your movie. Like, that person cannot exist.
No, at all.
And also, this could open up an avenue for, you know, the American Cancer Society, you know, endorsing the movie and things like that. Exposure, you know.
But what I want to be able to do with it, and I have legal dibs on this, so no one can steal it from me. But what I want to be able to do is just like, you know, I want to pay for the production and pay for the movie itself like that. And then I don't want anybody to make a profit off this. Like, I don't want to get paid for it. You know, I mean, pay for people's time, pay for the production cost material, whatever like that we need to do. And then all of the money gets split up between like American Cancer Society and St. Jude's, and just take that money and give it back to cancer research. And then like, maybe we can actually help kill cancer for fucking reals by making, you know, a silly little 90-minute movie about it. But I want to make the movie that 14-year-old and 47-year-old me would watch with equal amounts of glee. So there's a lot of legalities involved in setting up, you know, probably setting up like a 501, all the legal shit. Right. 501(c)(3), I don't know what that shit is. But I want to do that. I want to be able to kill cancer. And I think that I can't help but think that, you know, that, that a lot of people, like I said, just people, you know, producers, locations, actors, you know, crew or whatever like that would want to be a part of it again for sincere and selfish reasons, but I'll take whatever I can get. So I think we can get, I think we'll probably be able to get a lot of stuff donated to us or, you know, at like a severe discount or something like that. Cause again, like this isn't one of those things where it's like, we're like, I'm going to go do a bunch of blow off a hooker and then like making my movie and seeing my trailer. And I want to kill cancer. And then I want to take all that money and just give it back to the American Cancer Society and then see what we can do with it. So like it's a pipe dream, but it's my pipe dream.
And also, man, I will be honored to make a trip down there to be Stone Pizza Boy number 2 in your movie. If possible, you know. For the cause.
For the cause.
Cool, man. The short that you have that you're working on now, are you shooting it or are you done?
We're in post right now. So I mean, we shot 16 pages and 20 hours over the course of a weekend in July. Nice. But that one was, and this one is, the Blue Eyed Boy and Mr. Death, it very near and dear to my heart, but it's not, I don't think anyone's going to see this one coming from me or from Mad One's film, because it's not a horror. It's not a thriller. It sort of has a slight surreal twist at the end, kind of like an original episode of The Twilight Zone. Like it doesn't sort of beat you over the head with it and be like, this is what just happened. It's sort of cosmic and karmic and left open-ended, and you can sort of fill in your own blanks, but there's one actor on screen. Most of it was shot at my house. But I was able to be able to work with Adam Hampton, the glorious legendary Adam Hampton, who I also met at Austin Revolution Film Fest. So that's ARF is the spring place for why I wouldn't be the filmmaker that I am now if it wasn't for film festivals like Austin Revolution Film Festival. And that's not blowing smoke. If anyone's asked, I mean, that's just a simple fact, because I've met so many of the people that are important in my personal and professional life as a filmmaker. I've met there. Just like you and me, and Adam Hampton was one of those. And I remember I saw him, and I was smitten. I was like, ooh, because there was like this man just clad all in denim. I was like, oh snap! I'm like, he looks so angry. And I saw him in Rough Cuts. So I'm like, oh, and I had a boy crush from the instant. So he's really the one character that's on screen, but I was also able to bring in worked with Mr. Vernon Wells, who was in Mad Max and Commando and Weird Science and Inner Space and Power Rangers.
Oh, so awesome.
So much. And Vernon Wells is amazing. And I was able to work with him in Kill Giggles. And at the end of Kill Giggles, he's like, if you ever have any other projects, he's like, call me. He's like, I'll be here for you in a heartbeat. And a lot of people say that, they're always just like, yeah, call me and we'll do stuff again. But he meant it, which was insane. So when I finally had a version of the script for Blue Eyed Boy that I was willing to share, I sent it to him. He's like, I've got to be a part of this movie. I was like, oh okay. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. So we were able to pull that off, but it's just, it's a movie about there's a guy who has his father passes away from cancer, and then Blue Eyed Boy Mystery is sort of the springboard for what I want to do with the Let's Kill Cancer movie, much in the way that Killing Giggles was kind of a proof of concept, and Blue Eyed Boy and the Let's Kill Cancer movie are not the same, but I just sort of wanted to be able to test the waters. Son who loses his father to cancer. And, you know, several, you know, a couple of years go by and he still has his dad's number in his phone. And, you know, buys a house and is sort of sitting on the porch celebrating, having a couple of beers and, you know, scrolling through the phone and looks at his dad's, you know, number and accidentally hits call. And then somebody picks up on the other end. And there's this whole series of phone conversations. And the whole point, the tagline I came up with was that, what if every great once in a while death felt bad for being a dick? and so this fellow gets a chance to have conversations he otherwise might not have had. And at the end, again, that's sort of leave it cosmic and karmic and open ended. But it's not a horror. It's not a thriller. And it's probably the most autobiographical thing I've ever written. So I mean, just most of the dialogue is based off of conversations that I was able to have with my father, because my father died of cancer back in 2010, with conversations I was able to have with him before he passed, because he was a photographer for most of his life. And I had been into filmmaking for about 5 or 6 years. So to be able to have, you know, an hour long conversation with him about lighting setup. And I mean, that was probably longer than, you know, an hour conversation was longer than I'd ever talked with him on the phone for the previous like 30 years. So, you know, to be able to spend that time with him and to be able was show him my movies because he never pushed me to get into photography. But I knew that he wanted me to. I mean, especially being a father to a beautiful blue-eyed boy on my own, like, I get it. But he never just put the camera in my hand and shoved me in front of it. He never made me do that. But I fell in love with being behind the camera in my own way. And I can't help but think, or at least I hope that he was able to appreciate that. So this short film is an entire homage to fathers and sons and just sort of that comic, cosmic, karmic chemistry that can sort of happen when the right relationships happen and you know, being able to say things that you might not have had a chance to say, regardless of whoever's on the other end.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, sounds like a touching, sweet story that I cannot wait to see once it's out of post-production and ready for public consumption, man. Congrats on that, man. That sounds beautiful.
But I'm hoping, I mean, with the grace of the filmmaking gods, the goal is to be able to have the world premiere at the next Austin Revolution Film Festival. Cause that was this coming one, 2024, originally was supposed to be the last ARF. They were going to sort of, turn off the lights, roll up the carpet and move on to the next big thing. But then I think that has since changed, and there's sort of been that. ARF will continue, and that makes me very, very happy. But yeah, that was going to be the big push, was that, you know, if there was going to be one last ARF, I wanted to be able to have that be the world premiere of this film where I had met the actor, and then that sort of helped put me on the path to where I'm at now. Right. So Tots and Pears, that will be the world premiere.
It will be. you said it out to the universe, therefore it's going to come back as a
yes.
A resounding yes. All right. So in closing,
yes.
What advice you can bestow on, that Jason, that was contemplating on, like, jumping into this madness that's filmmaking, that the creative process of storytelling, things of that nature. You know, if you was in that DeLorean and you went back, and you caught yourself as you were just contemplating it, what would you say to you to help the journey, less of a bumpy ride, let's say.
I would say I don't know if there's any one thing you could say. I mean, the first thing you say is like, what the fuck are you thinking, dude? Just don't. Like, it sounds like a great idea in theory. Don't. Just do what you're doing. It's been an excellent adventure. It's been an unexpected one, and I honestly don't know what the future holds for me. There are a ton of other ideas that I still need to work out. There are screenplay demons screaming in my head at all hours of the night. Everyone has a big boner for multiverses and everything like that, because that's the way that we retcon shitty stories we don't want to tell anymore. But I don't know if I could give myself a piece of advice, because that would alter. I don't know if I would be where I am now if I went back and gave myself that advice. Like, I mean, I had to go through those trials and those tribulations and the good things and the bad things and everything else to get to where I'm at now. Keep on keeping on. Puff, puff, give. Up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right. A, B, starts. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Don't eat yellow snow. Never trust Paul Harper. Like, I don't know what there is that I could say to myself besides just fucking do it. That's the advice that I would give myself or any other person who's considering being a filmmaker. It's just fucking do it. Write something, make your first film, and it's gonna suck. Unless you're just one of those rare people, blessed by the film gods. But it's supposed to suck, because then you'd be like, oh, well, that sucked. I want to do it better. And then you do it better the next time. Write a screenplay, pick up a fucking camera, be in front of the camera, be behind the camera. If you don't have any gear of your own, I think Celtics is free. You know, Final Draft is not that much. I have a big stack of Zebra pens and a shit ton of tablets. I have to handwrite everything out before, like, I can't write at a computer. I can't just start open. I can't open a Final Draft and be like, interior scene, blah, 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 blah. Like, I've got to write everything out multiple times. And then when I get it perfect on paper, then I'll type it into the computer. But I mean, it's just, you know, there's something integral about putting a pen to paper and then just writing and not necessarily, you know, having an idea of where it might go, hopefully. But that may not be where you end up. So, nobody can ever unmake your film. You know, you can't, I mean, you could crumble up the sheet of paper or whatever, but it's still going to exist with those words on it. Like that, you are birthing something into this reality that previously did not exist. And whether it be an idea or a camera angle or whatever like that, or a song for a movie or something, to me, that's amazing. To me, that's doing your part to make the world a better place. And that's something I would highly encourage anybody to do. So I mean, it's not about having the biggest, you know, the biggest, most expensive fucking toys. It's not about that. It's about an idea. It's about creativity and collaborativity together, working together, finding the people that can do the things that you can't do. And then just making something work and finding those people that are just fucking crazy enough to want to go on a crazy ride with you. It's like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, except all the safety harnesses are off. You know, I mean, it's like you don't know where it's but if you can find the people that are fucking nuts enough, that's why I mean, I named my company Mad Ones Films, which is, you know, based off of a Kerouac quote that I read when I was entirely way too young, much like the title for Blue Eyed Boy and Mr. Death, which comes from an E.E. Cummings poem I read in seventh grade. It rattled around in my skull for about 35 years and then became a short film. So, I mean, that's, you know, yes, you know, where does inspiration strike? Apparently it struck in seventh grade. I had no clue until, you know, 35 years later. So, I mean, it's just being willing to be able to just be open and look at the world in a different way, because the world is a scary fucking place and there's too much badness, madness and sadness in it, which is why I think filmmakers are all, you know, filmmakers, storytellers are always going to be needed. And AI is swell, but Skynet can suck a binary dick. I can't.
Yeah.
Skynet, come get me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's the beauty, right? Because, you know, they're never gonna cry like a human. So, you know, so they're not gonna know, right?
Yeah. I mean, I know humans don't even cry like humans sometimes. You know, I mean, it's, maybe they're Terminators. I don't know, but it's just, yeah, just fucking make it, do it.
Right. All right. Hey, you know, words of wisdom that we can put on that tombstone. And we definitely appreciate all of your knowledge. You know, thank you. No, it's seriously. Thanks for, you know, telling your story and. And also, it's a lot of enlightening things, you know, far as the, you know, the financing and things like that. I mean, that's like, again, like that's a lot of things, you know, filmmakers, they think about, okay, let me just shoot it. But then, okay, there's that other aspect that you went through, you know, and I'm glad that you can, you know, enlighten us a little bit on that and, you know, the creative process, you know, and how you approach it, how you skin that cat. And we, yeah. And I can't wait. I personally can't wait to see the next masterpiece you come out with. And keep me posted, you know, once Kill Giggles is, you know, out of the shackles of distribution. And
I mean, like, at this point, like, I'm just going to sell Puffy Case VHS out of the trunk of my car on my lunch break, you know, like I don't know. Like, I'm just inviting people to, I want to see Kill Giggles. Man, get like a bottle of rum and come over to my house and you can watch on my laptop and I'll go downstairs and drink, and you can, because I don't want to see anymore. I'm sick of that movie. I'm not watching anymore. But not to kick the same horse, but like, I wouldn't be the filmmaker that I am now if I hadn't gone through that Kill Giggles process, because going through that completely changed the way that I handle filmmaking now, you know, from a short film to a feature film. But I mean, it changed the way that I deal with all aspects of production. Like I said, the deliverables was the biggest thing, because I've got books on like how to get your film distributed. Well, I did that, but they don't tell you about deliverables. They don't tell you about digital deliverables or legal deliverables and having to get like, and that was the problem, is we shot Kill Giggles in 2019 and we were all ready to go. And like, you know, like March of 2020, we had like, we were in a picture lock and it was going to be fucking cool. And well, the apocalypse happened, which kind of put like a thumb up the butt of all their plans. Like, we're gonna release our movie. No, everyone can fuck up and ask the same time, which at the time seemed like a perfect time to release a movie, but they still didn't do it. And then now that like they're making like Terrifier 3, I'm like, what about Kill Giggles 1?
Yeah, exactly. We so want that.
Out there wants to sponsor a movie that you can come to my house and like you can just watch it on my laptop and like make a donation to like the Humane Society or St. Jude's or something like that, and you can watch Kill Giggles for free.
Yeah. I'll bring the pizza. Cool. Well, I appreciate you. Thanks for stopping into the Filmmakers Lounge, and I'm definitely gonna have you on again for your next masterpiece that you kind of release to the world.
Had by you, brother Yusuf. Huh? I will always be had by you, sir. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, I mean. me and Jason have this running thing all the time, in reference to our favorite movie, comedy of all time, Coming to America. How we say we make each other soul glow. You know, if we had soul glows, we would do a couple of sprays in honor of each other.
we might have to coordinate that for the next arc. Yeah, if we both show up there. So
a sex with child? Okay, I mean, I probably need an instrument. Like, bring me a guitar or something.
We could do that, have like a karaoke, like Randy Watson cover band or something like that.
Yeah, we come in with our soul glows and our blue puffy tuxes.
Powder blue tuxedo. We could do that.
Yeah, well, we need two more people and we're good. Right. With sex with chocolate has begun. All right, brother. Well, appreciate you, Jason. And on behalf of Filmmakers Lounge, we wish everyone peace. We out.